Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. This month, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, is weighing a case to allow a tobacco company to do something it's never done before, claim that one of its tobacco products is less risky than cigarettes. Snus is a product which comes out of the relatively small tobacco company Swedish Match in Stockholm. The product is a tobacco pouch. It looks kind of like a tea bag, which is placed under the upper lip, sort of like chewing tobacco, except it doesn't require you to spit. For now, the warning label on cans of Swedish snus sold in the United States reads, "This product can cause mouth cancer," and cautions that, quote, "it is not a safe alternative to cigarettes." But representatives of the company in Sweden want to change that label so it is, in their view, more truthful. Well, when a tobacco company claims it's fighting for truth, we have to raise some eyebrows, don't we? But some credible research does seem to indicate that snus is significantly safer than actual cigarettes. Other researchers are not so sure. But either way, people are still craving nicotine. 1 in 10 adults have tried an e-cig. And people are beginning to ask for more regulated, smokeless tobacco products. Here today to talk us through this is Rob Stein, correspondent and senior editor on NPR Science Desk. He recently reported out a piece on this topic. There's a link to that on our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Rob Stein, thanks for joining us this morning. Hi.
Hi, nice to be here.
So for people who've never heard of this, what exactly is snus?
Yes, snus is, you described it pretty well. It basically, it looks like tiny little tea bags, but they're, instead of filled with tea, they're filled with tobacco, flavored tobacco. And what people do is they kind of slip it under their upper lip on the side of their mouth, and it's a way of getting a little bit of a sort of a the taste of tobacco and a little bit of a jolt of nicotine whenever you want it, and it's more convenient when you can't smoke or have a cigar. You can't have a cigarette or a cigar or something like that.
Popular in Sweden, everybody would know snus if I walked down the street in Stockholm.
Yeah, apparently it's wildly popular in Sweden.
I saw a stat, 19% of adult Swedish men use snus daily, which is actually up from 17% in 1988. As tobacco use generally is going down around the world, snus use by women has risen from less than 1%. But wow, that's 19% of Swedish adult men using it, just 3% of women. So is this a guy thing?
It's popular both, mostly among men, but women do use it as well. And but that statistic that you mentioned is one of the things that the company uses as an argument for what they're trying to do, which is that as snus use has increased in places like Sweden and Norway, cigarette smoking has decreased. It's been an inverse relationship, and they make the case that the same thing could happen in this country. It could provide a way for smokers to basically kick the habit by using their product instead.
Have you been reviewing the literature as science correspondent on whether snus really is safer than cigarettes and whether there is science to back that up or to refute that claim?
Yeah, I have been. I've took a look at that, and I've taken a look at what the company has submitted to the FDA, and talked to a lot of public health experts and tobacco experts about this. And people generally seem to think that snus probably is less risky than cigarettes. The main reason is there's no smoke involved, and smoke contains a lot of the carcinogens and dangerous substances that can cause health problems like lung cancer and lung failure and a variety of different types of cancer.
Also heart disease, other systemic things when smoke is going into your lungs and then getting into your bloodstream, right?
That's right. So there is a feeling that, it probably does not pose the same level of risk as cigarettes. The question is, how much of less risk does it pose, and what will be the dynamics if people start using this? Those are really the two big questions.
Snus, the snus manufacturer, Swedish Match, even disputes that there is an oral cancer risk, so the local effect of having your mouth exposed to the stuff. What's the data on that?
Yeah, there is some data to suggest that it may not pose the same level of risk for oral cancer as, say, chewing tobacco does. And that's one of the things they're asking the FDA to do, is to let them drop the warnings that are currently on the labels that say it causes oral cancer and that it also causes, like, tooth and gum problems. And as you mentioned, they want to also change the label to drop the warning that it doesn't pose less risk than cigarettes, to say that, yes, indeed, that this product poses substantially less risk than cigarettes.
Other research showing increased cancer risk is decades old and involves patient populations using oral tobacco products with apparently far more cancer-causing toxins than the current products, and still other research doesn't adjust for the cancer-causing impact of cigarette smoking, which is often done in tandem with using snus, from a fact sheet that I've been given. So all of those things seem to argue in support of the FDA looking favorably on this claim. What's going on in Washington?
Yeah, so there's a hearing that's going to be coming up later this month, April 9th and 10th, where the FDA is going to be taking a look at all these issues. And as you sort of just alluded to, it's complicated because it's hard to tease out all the relative effects of smoking versus other tobacco products, because a lot of people end up using both of them together. And so it's a complicated issue. But as you also mentioned, the FDA has never done this before, and it's the first time they've really considered an application. The FDA got the power in 2009 to regulate tobacco, and with that power came the power to designate certain tobacco products as what they call modified risk, meaning they have less risk than cigarettes. And the idea there is, you know, as we all know, the tobacco companies for years are making all kinds of claims about different tobacco products. You, we all remember light cigarettes, which were supposedly less risky than regular cigarettes, and turned out not to be the case. So the Congress, when they gave the FDA power to regulate tobacco, they wanted the FDA to be the one that decides whether or not tobacco companies can make those sorts of claims. And they've gotten many applications over the years. They've never accepted any of them up until now. This is the first one they decided where there may be enough, it may be credible enough for them to actually, you know, take a serious look at it.
Listeners, any snus users out there, you want to call in and talk about the experience or talk about how you calculate the cancer risk? Anybody using it in the way we've been discussing, which is kind of, you know, a way to stop using tobacco products, stop actually smoking, but still get some of that nicotine fix that you may crave, or anyone with an opinion on either side of this, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Rob Stein, science correspondent for NPR. There is such a visceral reaction, I have it, I'm sure so many of our listeners have it, to the government doing anything that seems to endorse the use of any kind of tobacco product, being what we know about tobacco, being that we know it's, you know, like the outsize behavioral cancer risk that exists, you know, over the last century, and that tobacco companies have lied and covered up and, you know, all of this horrible history. There's an emotional response, never mind a scientific response and a political response. There's an emotional response that people are going to have that's like, no, we're just not endorsing tobacco again in our lifetime.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there's a good reason to have, you know, deep concerns and deep skepticism about, you know, the tobacco industry after all the years in which they concealed the dangers about smoking. You know, so it's interesting that the public health community is seeming trying to keep an open mind this time. And the reason for that is that, you know, there's a feeling that this is probably the beginning of the first of many products that might be coming on the market that to offer smokers an alternative to smoking that may, in fact, be less risky and may help drive down the smoking rate. Now, as you alluded to, though, there are, you know, some serious concerns people have about doing this. Here's a couple of them. The first one is that, you know, although this product may be less risky than cigarettes, it's probably not totally safe. It still contains nicotine, for example, which carries its own health risks. It can increase blood pressure, heart rate, and that may increase the risk for things like heart problems and strokes.
So it does also get into your system. It's not just a local exposure at the mouth, as I put it before. It does get into your bloodstream, and because if it raises blood pressure, it must be in your bloodstream.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You're putting a product into your body that contains nicotine and other things, and it's a drug delivery device in certain ways. And the other concern is that, you know, yes, there was a drop in cigarette smoking in Sweden as snus use went up, but we really don't know whether the same thing might happen here. And some people are worried that, in fact, it may have the opposite effect. It may be providing smokers sort of a crutch to keep smoking. You know, if it's getting harder and harder to smoke cigarettes, there's more and more places where it's forbidden. And so that prompts a lot of people to quit. But if this gives them a way to, you know, get that nicotine fix they need when they're at work or, you know, at a restaurant, that'll enable them to keep smoking. So it may, in fact, discourage people from smoking.
Derek?
From quitting smoking, I'm sorry.
In Southport, Connecticut, you're on WNYC. Hi, Derek.
Hi. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. What would you like to say?
Yes, well, I spent a number of years at the World Health Organization where I led development of the Global Treaty on Tobacco. And in the process, we obviously had to evaluate the impact of snus and some of the emerging harm reduction products. The work finished about 10 years ago. And at that point, it was already being clear that the countries where snus use was greater had substantially lower cardiovascular and cancer death rates. The problem was that the regulators and many governments were so distrustful of industry that they thought either it was a trick, the research couldn't be believed, or it simply wasn't true. I think that the last 10 years is showing the evidence has simply got stronger. As you commented, the Swedish death rates overall, and particularly from cancers, are about the lowest in Europe. The death rates among men are substantially lower than among women in Sweden. Women find it disgusting to use snus, and so have stuck with traditional cigarettes, keeping up their death rates. If you compare them to Finland, which was a great snus user until it was banned many years ago, the decline in smoking and the death rate in Finland has been substantially slower than in Sweden, where it's legal, and both the death rate and the overall smoking rates have come down, suggesting overall that snus actually plays a positive role both in reducing the death rate, which is what we want, but also aids long-term cessation in a population.
Wow. Was it hard for you and your colleagues at the World Health Organization to come to these conclusions? Was there a visceral resistance to endorsing tobacco products?
There still is.
Yes.
It's a huge issue. One of the bits of work we did was following the Minnesota court case against the tobacco companies. All the documents about the way they subverted public policy were put in the public domain. So we took those documents and put out a UN report showing how governments and individual ministers of health around the world have been subverted. And in many ways, policies and regulations have been changed according to the way the tobacco companies wanted. By putting that in the public domain, I think we started introducing an air of transparency into the way the policy environment happened. But it certainly left so many people with this view that you simply can't trust anything that the tobacco companies do. And as I said, now we're in an era where we're seeing a range of harm reduction methods, which should drive us to ask one clear question. Are they really going to be able to lower the death rates? And given that we have 6 million people dying of tobacco every year, 500,000 in this country, I really believe that this represents potentially one way forward that has to be done very carefully so that you don't draw young people and new smokers into the fold, but that you address the fact that even in this country, 42 million smokers, if a fraction of them shifted to full-time snus or e-cigarette use, their death rate would definitely come down over the next few decades.
Derek, has the World Health Organization, to your knowledge, looked at e-cigarettes or vaping?
Yes, they have. And they've come to a rather, wishy-washy decision to actually hold any firm decision until a major review has been completed in 2 years' time, which is worrying, given the fact that the more one introduces doubt in the minds of a smoker about whether it's good for them to move to an e-cigarette or even snus, the more they're likely to stick with their current product. And that, as we know, will kill half of its regular users. As far as I know, the only country where a senior public health official in the cabinet has come out clearly saying that for a smoker, moving to snus or moving to e-cigarettes reduces your risk is the United Kingdom. And that was in the last couple of weeks.
Derek, what country are you from originally?
I'm originally from South Africa. I live here now, and we actually have a good record of tobacco control that was based very heavily on raising the taxes dramatically over the period post-Mandela, with fair success. But now they're hitting a ceiling, and the same question about how do we address it through harm reduction and continuing the regulatory process is very much a live debate in South Africa as it is here, as it is in Europe.
Well, your parents blessed you with the ring of authoritativeness in your delivery. Thank you for your call. And Rob Stein, NPR science correspondent. Pretty interesting to hear from Derek, who worked with the World Health Organization. Sounds like he was pretty steeped in this stuff.
Yeah, and I'd say that's sort of the vibe I've been getting from talking to tobacco experts and public health experts in this country, too, is that, you know, as I said earlier, they're trying to keep an open mind about this. There's a lot of, you know, suspicion about tobacco companies, but they also realize that the smoking rate's been sort of stuck at this stubborn level for a while, and it might be helpful to offer them some alternatives that are not totally risk-free, but maybe less risky than cigarette smoking.
Millie on the west side of Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Millie.
Hi, Brian. Happy Passover.
Thank you.
I just want to say that I was a smoker for years, and I had quit for many years after my daughter was born, and I have had a history over the last few of going back and forth and back and forth just for a few months. But I completely stopped again, and thought that one day when I got an urge, whether it was something that happened to me in my life or whatever, where I had that urge for a cigarette, I said, let me do the e-cigarette. Let me try that. And I did it for a little while, and I think I bought two of them. And when I went back to go get another one, instead of buying the e-cigarette because it just wasn't cutting it anymore, I went back to buying packs of cigarettes. But I'm done again because I'm a binge smoker. But I think those e-cigarettes, this is my take on the whole thing, that once you get a little bit of taste of nicotine, and if you're a smoker, and I'm an ex-smoker, if you're a smoker, the e-cigarette after a while just doesn't cut it, and you go back to the tobacco. So that's what I want to say.
Millie, thank you for sharing your experience. There was a piece on All Things Considered yesterday, as you know, Rob, that looked at the question of whether e-cigarettes are a gateway drug to regular cigarettes, or whether they're an exit path from cigarettes to quitting, which way the government should look at it for regulatory purposes.
Right. And that's one of the big concerns about this question here with snus. Several of the public health experts I talked to are worried that, look, you know, if we label this thing that says, oh, this is less risky than cigarettes, kids may see that and say, oh, you know, well, you know, I'll try this. This isn't risky. I can just try this. And they might try it, and then they might get addicted to nicotine that way. They may end up move on, become like lifetime chewing tobacco addicts, or they might end up starting to pick up cigarettes when the snus doesn't do it for them anymore.
Really, for the first time since 1972, we have recreational nicotine being advertised on television and radio. Here's a clip of a commercial that Jenny McCarthy did for Blue e-cigarettes.
Hey, I'm Jenny McCarthy. You know, being single has its perks, but when it comes to smoking, smelling like an ashtray is not the ideal aphrodisiac. That's what I love about Blue. When I switched to Blue electronic cigarettes, not only did I feel better about myself, I felt the freedom to have a cigarette without the guilt. With Blue e-cigs, there's no tobacco smoke, only vapor. Now when I go to public places that don't allow smoking, I can whip out my Blue and know that I won't scare any guys away.
Whoa. So we play that not to advertise Blue, obviously, but to say that everybody, you know, today has grown up with a world in which cigarette advertising on television, or let's say anybody since 1972, has grown up in a world where there is no cigarette advertising, there is no tobacco product advertising on television. It was banned, you know, once upon a time, way, way back, cigarettes were advertised on television, and that was banned once the public health effects were pretty fully known. So the government allows this with Blue?
Yeah. As you know, Brian, that's the other big issue before the FDA right now when it comes to tobacco issues is what to do about e-cigarettes. The FDA has said that the agency is going to regulate these things. The big question is, how are they going to regulate them, and how tightly are they going to control the marketing and advertising of these products? And again, there's a huge debate in the public health community about this, because on the one hand, you know, some people think, well, you know, this could help some smokers quit or could keep some people from starting to smoke. And on the other hand, a lot of people say these things are so new, we really don't know how safe they are, and they might be a lot more dangerous than we think they are, and they're being presented as being, and it might end up leading to people starting to smoke, especially kids.
New kinds of tobacco products, new kinds of nicotine delivery systems, raising new questions of safety and government regulation. Rob Stein, NPR science correspondent, thank you so much.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Fareed Zakaria next. Stay with us.